real shame that they just decided to not play a baseball game today while we were recording. It was going to be fun.
It was going to be super fun.
Recording a show while they were playing. But apparently they just canceled it.
Yeah, they said, you know what, we don't need baseball today.
Yeah.
And you know what? I agree with them. We don't need baseball today.
Yeah, I'm fine. After a couple of good days in a row, we don't even need, you know, daytime Thursday baseball. It's it's an overrated thing. And I'm glad that they saw that the same.
I'm glad that, yeah, they realize this first time the MLB's really realized what we, the fan, are actually feeling and what we want.
Right, you know, right. Listening to
it's not about blackouts.
Yeah.
It's not about every pitch, every game.
Nope.
It's not about, you know, bat flips and unwritten rules. It's about this, not playing games at noon Eastern time.
Right.
On Thursdays.
Thank God. Thank God. What I say to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been cool if we opened up this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast with a live Rockies game going on concurrently, but it just turns out that we're not. They're not playing an afternoon game in Pittsburgh, and they're certainly not down 4-0 in the third, as would be a bad thing.
Certainly, you know, not going to get shut out by Jordan Lyles today at all.
Also,
no.
Does Jordan Lyles – well, I should say this. If this game was currently going on, does Jordan Lyles tuck his ears into the side of his fitted hat?
It sure looks like he does.
It certainly looks like he does, and I am absolutely tweeting that out.
If this game were actually happening, we could be talking about that and saying, wow, what if Jordan Lyles tucked his ears?
Right,
excuse
right.
me, it's going to be all choked up. Tucked his ears into his hat, like that kid in second grade who tucked his jeans into his long tube socks.
Yeah, yeah. One of my high school best friends, who may actually be listening to this, this episode, he listens pretty regularly. Pat Kelly came to our first ever, baseball practice in high school and forgot to bring baseball pants. So he wore jeans and our head coach called him Jeans Boy for the next 4 years. Like, first impressions forever.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah,
and there's the Venn diagram of kids who tuck their jeans into their tube socks and pull their pants all the way down at the urinal is just a big circle.
Oh, man. So with that, hey, welcome into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Vaughn.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we're talking a little Rockies baseball on the final day of an 8-game but somehow 11-day road trip.
No. Ridiculous.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
they had three off days in a 7-day span in the middle of a road trip, which is absurd.
Strange. Very strange. I don't get that at all.
No, it makes no sense.
I'm sure it's happened before, but I don't recall a road trip like that ever.
No, because it shouldn't happen that way.
Very strange.
Yeah.
You get like one off day on a road trip, that makes sense for travel. Two is even like, oh man, well that's weird. Three, come on.
Yeah, no
come
thanks.
On. So anyway, doesn't seem like it's helped them. The Rockies, if they had a game today and they came back and won, they would finish a road trip at 4-4. I think you feel pretty good about that.
Sure.
But an ugly series in Philadelphia, a frustrating series in Philadelphia, we should say. And I feel like it's been a pretty bad road trip for umpires also. I feel like night after night, it seems like we've complained about umpires more really this entire season, but this road trip seems like it's been kind of annoying that way. You know, I don't know. They played horribly in Philadelphia, and you get a win in a fictional game today. At least you could go home 500, but 3-5, I'm not going to be devastated about.
No, and the four losses you had entering today in the game that didn't happen were by combined 5 runs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they were getting blown out in all these games, but at the same time, it's more frustrating that way that they lost all those games by 1 run or 2 runs or whatever. One on a walk-off in Boston, and then you had the first 2 1-run losses in Philly where you had plenty of opportunities and leads in those games. And then the third one, you lost by 2 runs, which is just stupid because Bryce Harper, and, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Maybe, here's a thought, don't have Mike Dunn face Bryce Harper
Bryce Harper this year.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's only 2 home runs allowed have been Bryce Harper. Yeah.
Who would have thought that the first time Bryce Harper hit one 9 million miles off of Mike Dunn, then putting him on a second time to face Bryce Harper would come out with the same result? That's, you know, it's a real mystery. But yeah, I mean, you know, coming into the day today, their four losses on the road trip are to a first place team and the reigning World Series champions, and
who are playing well. Like, yeah,
I find this headline on MLB.com today comical. Quote, clock is ticking for Boston and AL East race. For everybody freaking the hell out about the Boston Red Sox, they are currently in a wild card position. They're three games over 500, and they right now, if the season ended today, they would clinch the second wild card spot in the AL.
Boy, if this game was played today, I don't know why you'd pitch to Josh Bell ever.
Yeah, it doesn't seem smart.
He's hotter than the sun right now, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And he had such a bad year last year, but you see his body and you're like, how do you like ever not hit the ball 5,000 feet? Like,
like, he's really finally getting it figured out.
He's getting his foot down, man. Jeez. Yeah. The Red Sox are three games over, but they started off like 6-19 or whatever
whatever it was.
That was all just great and fun. We were all laughing at them. And since then it's been not as fun for everybody else. AL East is good. Tampa's good. The Yankees are good.
Yeah.
Like, but the good thing, the Rockies get to go home after this non-game happening today and get to face the two worst teams in the AL East on this home. So that'll be fun.
Hopefully that'll be a good thing.
Yeah, Toronto and Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah, Toronto and Baltimore. What a weird homestand. Sandwiched around. Baltimore comes in first this weekend at Coors Field. And then match up with the Arizona Diamondbacks, who somehow the Rockies have played once this year. we've talked about this before. Feels like the Rockies have made continuous seasons out of playing the D-backs 900 times through April and May. But, you know, it's sorry. There's mention right now that is the dumbest mention that I think I've seen in forever. The Rockies have not been willing to pay the big bucks for a stellar bullpen. Think Houston, Los Angeles, and New York.
Two of those three teams have not paid any money to their bullpen guys.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I don't even know how to respond to something this dumb.
Yeah.
But anyway, interesting homestand coming up with Baltimore and Toronto coming to town. Arizona being there in the middle. You know, it's, again, we said this going into the last road trip. You kind of figure that you can hopefully, or in last homestand, I should say, kind of figure that you can hopefully get one of those 10-game homestands where you go 7-3, 8-2. Didn't happen last time out.
That'd
be fun. Dealt with some weather and all that, but you really need one of those.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice for sure because the Orioles have given up 1,000 home runs this year. That's approximate. Sorry, I was rounding up. But they've actually given up over 100 home runs faster than any other team in history by a good 10 games. And they get to come to Coors Field this weekend, which that should be fun. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing them hit about 10,000 feet worth of dingers this weekend. I don't know. That'd be fun.
I would be very down with that.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Like,
just trying to... trying to wrap my mind around just how down I would be with that. I just want to see one of those homestands where they go out and they score like an average of 11 runs a game. And yeah, they had 72 homers over the span of 10 games. I think that'd be fun.
I mean, they're facing Toronto too, which is, you know, Toronto's not been playing well at all. The D-backs are kind of falling back to earth a little bit since the last time we saw them. No, man, let's just go and play some good ball. Like the Rockies are, you know, they kind of are what their record says they are. That we are who we thought they were, you know, kind of thing with the Rockies. You know, they're entering today or the game that's not being played. They're 22-25. You know, their Pythagorean win loss as like what they're or they should be based on run differential and all that other stuff. They should be 500 is what it says. So you'd be 24-24. They're 22-25. You know, at some point. Yeah,
things
that's
even
who
out.
They are. That's who they are.
Yeah.
So the issue is with the rest of the National League, there's a lot of teams that are in contention for a very few amount of playoff spots, and they'll be fighting with them all season long. The Dodgers seem to be rolling toward their seventh consecutive NL West title.
Yeah, which is very annoying.
Very annoying.
You know, we got a lot of Ask PDPs to get to, including some questions about where the Rockies could be in the playoff chase. But it's very irritating that the Dodgers, you kind of figure like, oh, man, last season was kind of worst case scenario for him. Maybe that's the start of things coming back to earth for the Dodgers.
Man, and you also just see like, listen, like I know it's every year, but like, yeah, Hyunjin Ryu is the best pitcher in the National League right now. Yeah, man, he spent every season healthy, you know, like.
every year somebody comes out of nowhere for the last year was Max Muncy.
Well, and Ryu's always been fine. It's just like he's been always
healthy,
hurt.
But yeah, he's always had issues, the back or whatever it's been with him. And there are things that you kind of think like, oh man, that's probably not going to just go away. He's probably not going to be magically healthy. But he has been this year, and he's been fantastic, and that is supremely irritating.
Yeah, and but you know, Kershaw is still throwing 89 up there and still getting people out. Like, okay, like, yeah, he's had a full year all the time recently, you know?
Yeah.
He's got to pitch like it's October for him, you know?
I'd be really frustrated with Antonio Senzatella if this game was going on today, but... It's a good thing that it's
Let's
not.
Just say Daniel Murphy loves Antonio Senzatella's fastball.
Oh, boy.
It's his favorite pitch.
Oh, boy. The Rockies will likely go home at 22-26 with an expected win-loss record of 24-24. Based on their runs for and runs against. Their run differential coming into the day today was +2, so at least they're on the right side in that category.
Hey.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's I don't know. I think they're a team that has not had a breakout sort of stretch, but they are also a team that dug themselves such a hole with that 3-12 start that, you know, they've played 5 games over .500 since that start. If they don't win this one today, and you feel okay about that had they not started 3-12.
Yeah, and that's going to be the issue the entire season for the most part. I mean, you have the 3-12 is – it doesn't seem like much when it's so early in the season, but that's – you're still 9 games under .500. That's – you know, you can play .500 ball the rest of the year, but you're still not going to get – make up those 9 games. You know, you got to play better than that. So they've been doing okay since then. You know, obviously they've been over .500 since that 3-12 start, but just, you know – really, they just kind of are who we thought they were right now. Like, yeah. there's still plenty of time left, plenty of time.
Yeah.
For the season to correct itself, or the Rockies to get hot, or whatever. Like we said, this weekend could be a good springboard for them playing the Orioles, who have been very, very bad. You liked the last 2 games. You liked how John Gray looked yesterday. He looked very, very in control. Nick Groke had actually a great article in The Athletic today about some mental health exercises that John Gray has been going on over the last 6 months or so, where he had a mental skills coach, a former, I believe, an Army veteran, had a couple tours in Iraq, worked with the team, who basically had John plot out what a game is like, from beginning to end, including good and bad innings, about what he feels and what he senses. And then this mental skills coach basically made it into an MP3 file for a whole, 2-hour MP3 file, and like sent it back to John so we could listen to it in his earphones before starts, and like feel the ups and downs of a baseball game before he goes out and actually pitches in that baseball game. It was kind of fascinating.
Interesting.
So read that today if you have a subscription to The Athletic, and you should anyway, because it's, you know, a very good thing. It's got the best covers the Rockies have out there for the most part. Nick Groke's doing a pretty good job. So read that. It's fun. But he looked good yesterday. Marquez was obviously fantastic the day before in Pittsburgh, because he is very fantastic for the most part. The one guy you got to get going is Kyle Freeland.
Yeah.
Kyle Freeland. We have had this discussion with about Kyle Freeland, about is he broken? Is he in need of some more rest? And his last start was not a good one, ending in 2/3. In Philly, and he did not look great. It's been a weird year for Kyle Freeland, obviously, because there are some starts where he clearly does not have his best stuff, and yet he still guts it through 6 innings or whatever. Like that game against Boston, the Rockies actually won when they struck out a million times. He ended up giving up 3 home runs early, and then gave up 3 runs the entire game through 6 innings, struck out 7. You're like, oh, well, that was not a bad start. And then he had a couple calls not go his way in the first inning of that game. And then some other things happened, kind of snowballed on him, and he ended up going an inning and 2/3 on the shortest outings of his career. So is Kyle Freeland broken, Tyler Mahon?
I certainly don't want to believe it, but the evidence doesn't seem to suggest anything else. I don't know if it's the blister. I don't know if it's an inability to really kind of attack guys the way he did last year. He looks a lot more like the guy who struggled in 2017 at various stages by just kind of nibbling and not being confident in his best stuff when he works against hitters. I don't know. I feel like he is such a valued asset of the organization, and he's so young, and you know, obviously being what you thought was the second head of your two-headed monster to lead the rotation, the Rockies are going to be extra cautious with him. So I feel like if the blister was at all an issue, they wouldn't be taking the chance of sending him out there every fifth day. So I don't think it is that. But I don't really know how to otherwise explain what's going on with him.
And a lot of the reason why they maybe not be that careful with him is because they don't really have a lot of people ready to go and take his place. I think Jeff Hoffman is going to be called up to start tomorrow, which is Friday, against the Orioles, because that is his turn in the rotation. Tyler Anderson is pretty much done for the season at this point. You need somebody to come in and step up, and no one's really taking the reins there. Hoffman has had some great starts in AAA. He's also had some terrible starts in AAA, which is bound to happen in a place like Albuquerque in the Pacific Coast League, because that's just how the PCL works. So he will be called up tomorrow. If he pitches well, that'd be great, because it gives the Rockies another power arm in their rotation who can get people out. If he doesn't, it's kind of back to square one again with what's going to go on every fourth or fifth day in this rotation.
So we're at a stage right now where I think everything is just so middle of the road with this team.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, I mean,
they really are just a 500 team.
Yeah.
They, that's like, pretty much what they are.
Everything has been just like a ham sandwich on white bread. Like, it's not a worst case scenario since that 3-12 start. It certainly hasn't been. We've seen some glimpses of what this team can look like when it's best case scenario. You know, the Monday game against the Pirates, or the Tuesday game against the Pirates, was really, really good. German Marquez looked fantastic out there. The offense was good that day. The offense in John Gray's start on the Wednesday game was terrific, and John looked pretty good again. But, you know, we've also seen series like the Philly series where they took, I think, a combined two pitches in the ninth inning in those three games. And it's like, you know, they've just been so middle of the road.
It's striking out a lot lately.
Yeah.
That's been a problem.
That is really ugly to watch.
But no, since that 3-12 start, you know, if this game that's not happening today goes the wrong way, they'll be 22-26, which means they will be, what, 19-14 since that 3-12 start, which is, hey, that's a full month.
That's fine.
Of playing pretty good baseball, playing like 530 baseball. Like, okay, that's great.
You get three, 4 more months of that, and you're a 90-plus win team again.
Exactly. Just the hole you dug at the beginning of the season. It's a tough one to climb out of, especially when, you know, your pitching staff has kind of been in flux the entire season. You know, the rotation ERA is the worst in baseball, but that's, you know, that's somewhat normal for the Rockies just because of where they play. And they're going to have high scoring games in that environment in Coors Field, hashtag Coors, no matter what. Freeland coming back to earth has not been great. Gray has been up and down, mostly up. Marquez has had some issues, but he's been the guy that we thought he was for the most part. It's been those last two spots. Like, who is it going to be? It's Senzatella. Is, you know, when his stuff is on, he's okay.
Yeah.
When it's not, it goes south early because
it's extremely hittable.
We're talking before the podcast. We're saying, like, all of his pitches seem just like show me pitches. Like, you know, a guy's got a fastball, a slider, and a curve, and a show me changeup. Just get the thought in the hitter's head that a changeup could become at any point, even though he never throws it. Seems like Senzatella's pitches all the time are just show me pitches because he's got some location issues. That's fine, but like, his fastball kind of goes around. Doesn't have much movement on it. His breaking ball is just kind of like flat up there sometimes, not much of a changeup otherwise. Like, it's a lot of foul balls. Like, he's, you know, if this game were happening, it's 2 1/3 right now. He's thrown 71 pitches. If that tells you anything, you know, so he's not a guy who's going to blow guys away. He doesn't have that swing and miss capability. So this is kind of who he is. If he can get weak contact in a certain day, he can do all right.
Which, you know, if that's the
oh yeah,
the guy
there
that
you're
looking at the back of the road, oh, God Almighty,
yeah, Jordan Lyles, nice 2-run double here. That's what you want.
God's sake. Well, at least they didn't leave anything to chance. What a supremely infuriating game this is. So anyway, they'll come home at 3-5 from this road trip. Could have made it 4-4. But it's they right now they're kind of in this mode that doesn't give us anything interesting to talk about. Like the only really interesting thing to talk about on this team right now is Brendan Rodgers.
Let's talk about Brendan Rodgers then, because we're not talking about this anymore. Like, good lord.
Yeah, it's you know, they call up a guy who is the organization's top prospect and has been the organization's top prospect since he was drafted in 2015, and then he sits two of his first four games in the major leagues. Granted, he's played the last two, so he's played
three hits last night. Yeah.
Since he got had the RBI double last night, but this is a scenario where it's kind of perplexing how they are going to figure out the way to get him into the lineup every day. It's, you know, Ryan McMahon, his first start since after Brendan Rodgers was called up, McMahon went out and hit two homers. The thing that's so weird is the Rocky, you know, we heard for so long, Ryan McMahon has struggled with left-handed pitching, and we covered this a lot last week. Ryan McMahon has been fabulous against left-handed pitching over the last couple of years at the major league level.
Yeah, oddly enough.
Brendan Rodgers against right-handed pitching was outstanding at AAA this year, far better than he was against left-handed pitching. So it's like, well, do you reverse platoon them? Like, if Daniel Murphy is going to continue getting starts at first base, do you put Brendan Rodgers in against right-handed pitching and Ryan McMahon against left-handed? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
That would be weird. But it would be outside the box.
Yeah, I guess. You've got these guys you want to get time for, especially Brendan Rodgers, and that's not to take anything away from Ryan McMahon, but, you know, how is this going to work now? I think for a while you thought the best-case scenario was, you know, Daniel Murphy goes back on the injured list because obviously he's not right, and then you could put McMahon at first base and have Rodgers at second base, but Murphy goes out, and he's got a double and a homer over the last couple of days, and, you know, maybe is starting to get it figured out.
I mean, because he was – until that, he was – god awful on this road trip. He was 0-11. He was 4-37 in May going into this series, and it had not gone well. But you know, a few hits last night, including the home run, made a lot of money for Bases for Pride last night, which is great news.
Yeah, which is always good.
So you know, Daniel Murphy trying to own the libs is a good hitter, and that's fine.
Yeah, which, you know, if it's if that's what it takes for Daniel Murphy to get motivated, then sure. Yeah, man, I don't know. It's the Brendan Rodgers thing is very exciting, but it is a little concerning if they don't figure out a way to have him in there every day. Because if he's not going to be in there every day, what was the point of calling him up?
Yes, you don't want to bring him up to just sit on the bench. That's the whole point of why you would not do that. The point is you bring him up because he's ready. He's done all he can in AAA. And you bring him up and see what he can do against big league pitching. The issue is he will not start on the left side of the infield, barring an injury, because Arenado and Story are there. The second base job, like we had mentioned last week, that it was McMahon or Hampson this year. They were going to come up and seize the position, and neither of them really did. So what it should do in theory is push Ryan McMahon back to a platoon role. He can go play first. He can play second when needed. You know, if Murphy's finger is not healing the way that we thought it was, if he needs to take a couple of days off, put McMahon at first, he can play first base. We already know that. They're very similar hitters right now in that sense. But you need to play Brendan Rodgers every day because the lineup is starting to click here in the month of May. And he's a guy who can really add a lot to this lineup because that second base spot has not gotten a lot of production at all for the Rockies this season. And if he can come up and solidify that spot and, you know, be the guy that we think he is, the number one prospect in the organization, then he should be given that opportunity. But that's not been Bud Black's MO. Bud Black's MO is not to give young guys a chance to start automatically. They have to, you know, put in their penance or, you know, carry that rock or whatever up the mountain or whatever rookies need to do in the eyes of Bud Black to get playing time. So you have to hope that Rodgers will, you know, make his own case. And when he gets opportunities, hit the ball and make the plays. He's made some nice plays in the field already, and I don't know. I'm not expecting him to get a lot of playing time just because that's not how Bud Black operates.
Yeah, but, and that's really frustrating.
Yeah, when we saw it with Tapia. We saw it with Story. We saw it, you know, with guys who, you know, have been, you know, David Dahl didn't get a lot of starts when he initially came up. You want to see guys who have who have been in the minor leagues for so long and put up big numbers, and they get a chance to finally compete when the Rockies seem to all they want to do is just sign aging veterans to fill these spots in the offseason. When they have guys who can come up and get a chance to play in the majors, they never get a chance to, and they get blocked then.
Yeah.
So we've let so many guys go in that time where we never really got a chance to see them play, and not just the guys who Todd Helton blocked for years and years and years, but, you know, the Chu Freemans of the world. I feel bad for Chu Freeman, you know, like,
yeah,
Chu Freeman should have been the guy. He should still be playing in center field for the Rockies. He would be 45 years old now.
I wonder how old Chu Freeman actually is. I bet he's still in his 30s.
I bet he probably is.
Chu Freeman. 39. He will be 40 on December 20th of this year.
Chu Freeman.
Yeah, it's, you know, I am mostly frustrated by the fact that you're an organization that has to build around homegrown talent, and yet you have a decree, whether it's from the top or it's your manager who's uncomfortable with it or whatever, but there is an extreme reluctance to trust the young guys every day when they first get up to the major league level. You basically have to be David Dollarim, El Tapia, go out and get a hit in every single game that you play in order to force yourself into the lineup, which is just not the way a lot of organizations approach. A lot of organizations say, you're going to play, we'll let you get your legs under you, all that. The Rockies seem to be more of a prove it and then you'll get your playing time, which I think it's difficult to prove it if you're not getting playing time.
Well, yes.
Brendan Rodgers, and granted, and we mentioned this a moment ago, he has played in 4 of the 6 games since he's been up at the major league level. That's a good thing, but it's, you know, that can't be, it can't go any less than that. This can't be a situation where this is a guy playing 50% of the games in which he's on the roster. Like, he was the third, fourth overall pick, whatever it was, when he came out of high school. He has been the top prospect in your organization since that day. Like, you need to get the guy, if he's going to be a cornerstone player for this team for a while, why not start it right now? You're right around 500. Throwing him in there every day is not going to make or break your season, but it has far more the potential to make than it does to break by solidifying something at second base for the Rockies. I still love Ryan McMahon. I really like Ryan McMahon. I very much wish that they wouldn't have spent the money on Daniel Murphy, because I think that they had an option in a guy who could have been an everyday first baseman and somebody like Ryan McMahon, you know, especially with Mark Reynolds being there as a much cheaper option. But, you know, they're in a situation now where I just don't. And it's such a small sample size to evaluate things on because it's only been 6 games, but I just don't understand the point of calling up Brendan Rodgers if you're going to treat him more like a platoon option than you are like an everyday guy.
Yeah. I think we're both on the same page there. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There was a topic that bubbled up on Twitter yesterday from our good buddy at Nate Kreckman, in which we're also both on the same page with this, but it got a lot of people talking. And it was a conversation that we wanted to have. Would you rather, if you were going to build a team, would you take peak Tulo or peak Cargo? And there was some Cargo news this week. As of yesterday, the Cleveland squad designated outfielder Carlos Gonzalez for assignment. He batted
the Cleveland Baseball Club, as somebody calls it on
Baseball
Twitter.
Club. Yeah. 210, 282, 276, 117 plate appearances.
He was
not really
good.
Exactly what they were looking for out there.
He was not good.
You know, he hit a couple of homers, but that was about it. The funniest thing is whenever we tweet something about if the Rockies should bring Cargo back, people get so furious about it. So now I just do it to make people mad.
Yes.
But it's pretty funny. I think, you know, when you evaluate those two guys side by side, there's only one answer to that question.
And
it's listen, not even really, like, debatable.
It's not, like, which guy was nicer? Well, which guy has more good stories about him? Like, which guy is a cooler person?
Yeah.
It's which guy would you want on your team?
Which baseball player
peak
would
production
want?
in their stretch?
Yeah,
and basically it comes down to pretty much what 2010 Tulo versus 2010 Cargo. It's you know, both guys were 6-ish win players, dynamic hitters, you know, great fielders, Gold Glovers. Which guy would you want more at their peak, Troy Tulowitzki or Carlos Gonzalez? And I posited on Twitter that while both were great, you know, 5-tool outfielders come around a lot more often than fantastic shortstops. And there was a point where Troy Tulowitzki was literally being regarded as the greatest shortstop in baseball, arguably was on track to becoming one of the greatest offensive shortstops in baseball history, to go along with the multiple-time Gold Glover. It's those guys come around a lot less often than outfielders who can run and throw and catch and hit 30 home runs. I think it's Troy Tulowitzki, and it's not close.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, he plays a much more valuable position. And when he was at his best, that team had such an engine from the shortstop position that you can't replicate from any other position on the field. And, you know, Cargo Gray and gave us some great moments and obviously was a terrific player when he was at his best. But it's just not.
And we like him a lot more than we like Tulo.
That's
pretty much what it comes down to as well. You know, like, we like him. He's a fun guy.
Even if Cargo was a center fielder, I think this conversation still goes the way of Tulo, and that's a much more valuable position than playing in the corners.
Especially,
but you just can't take. You know, the conversation would more evenly be maybe peak Helton or peak Cargo in terms of, well, seeing even that.
Yeah, but
Helton,
like,
I think plays a vastly more important.
Peak Helton was an insane player.
Yeah, true. And it was an insane era, a pre-humidor for a long stretch, dude flirting with 400 type of player.
Like, it would have to be like a guy like peak Larry Walker versus peak Tulo. That would be somewhat on par with each other. I know Walker's numbers were so much better, but think about the era he was playing in, the non-humidor Coors Field. And the fact that he put up, you know, 370, 50, and 150, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of production you have as a right fielder, you know, to compare it to a great shortstop in that regard. So that's why I think it's no contest there that it is too low. But, like, I mean, boy, do we love, you know, Carlos Gonzalez. I mean, he's a wonderful person, great player. It seems weird that the time seems to be coming to an end for him, considering he's only like 32, 33, whatever he is now.
That makes me very sad.
It seems like he got old very quickly.
Very scared about myself.
Yeah. I just turned 33, you know?
I don't like it. I don't like it.
And I just re-sprained my ankle, you know, walking yesterday in my backyard. So, you know, I get it.
Did they put us down eventually? Like, is
that
what happens?
Yeah, just like horses.
We just get to a stage where they, like, call us into a barn. There's a shotgun waiting there. And just like a surly old man was like, "Ah, you done good, kid." And then that's it.
Yeah, we gotta go try to find a farm upstate. Yeah.
Womp womp. So that it was a fun topic. But it's kinda the unfortunate answer. It's not the answer that you wanna give because you love Cargo and have such good memories of Cargo, but it's kinda the only answer. Sorry everyone. Sorry to make it so cut and dry.
Yeah.
But that's how good Tulo actually was. It isn't, by the way, just Tulo, apparently, that the rehab injury bug is biting. I saw today that the Yankees also had to stop the rehab assignment of Giancarlo Stanton. Tulo, if you don't remember, calf strain, which I really didn't believe because when he left the game at the major league level for the Yankees, in which he was injured with a quote-unquote calf strain, they took him to a hospital immediately.
Took him to a horse hospital and shot him.
I don't think for a calf strain. It's like Kevin Durant when they were like, Kevin Durant day-to-day with a calf strain. He's missed every game since. Like, I'm pretty sure you don't just rush a guy to the hospital for a calf strain.
Yeah.
But anyway, then Tulo went down to Tampa, got started on a rehab assignment there, felt the issue again. He's been out since. Giancarlo Stanton also, the Yankees were hoping they were going to get him back. He went down to Tampa. He had biceps and shoulder injuries, and then he had tightness in his calf. And
yeah, so
he's back.
He went out initially with the shoulder injury, and then during that rehab, he hurt his biceps.
Yeah.
And then
during the rehab from that, he hurt his calf.
Jogging around on his home run with the Tampa Tarpons, which I cannot say without thinking of the other word that's close to tarpon.
Yeah.
They got to figure that out. That's not great.
Yeah.
He hurt his calf. It's like, okay, that's so you're just not going to play this year. So,
yeah, that's a bummer. Yeah. And they've still won 30 games. That's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're still one of the best teams in all of baseball with playing like Mike Tauchman every day, which is so annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't even remember where I was going with that. Basically, everybody gets hurt. Oh, I know the point I was going to make. Speaking of injuries, Wade Davis is on the 10-day injured list for the Rockies. A strained left oblique with him. That was a flurry of roster moves that the Rockies made on Wednesday. Tyler Anderson went to the 60-day DL, knee surgery for Tyler Anderson. And the Rockies recalled Jairo Diaz from AAA Albuquerque, who's had an insane story. 27 years old still, just for Jairo Diaz, who has been brilliant at the AAA level this year. One run over 20 innings pitched. He's only allowed 12 hits, 6 walks. He has struck out 22. And Jairo Diaz has an incredible story, and we pumped this yesterday on Twitter again. But if you have not read Nick Groke's story in The Athletic about Jairo Diaz, Diaz had a baby girl with his wife a couple of years ago, and then his wife was diagnosed with cancer. She passed away, I think, at like 26. So Jairo Diaz is now raising a little girl on his own, and underwent Tommy John surgery and was trying to make his way back to the major leagues as a guy who is already dealing with enough on the professional side, and then has everything happen in his personal life, and now he is back at the major league level, and that is really pretty incredible, and a real easy guy to cheer for. Diaz, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if Wade Davis is out for an extended period of time and Jairo Diaz pitches well upon getting started at the major league level, maybe they give him a look in some of those save spots. But it looks like right now Scott Oberg will be the guy in the closer's role for the Rockies. Carlos Estevez has held that role at times over his career, so maybe he gets a look also. But the bullpen is somewhat in flux, and Wade Davis, it's strange that you can get hurt when you never pitch. Like he's barely been active this year.
I mean, the last time he pitched was the last time he pitched that the game he saved against the Red Sox when he actually looked really good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, it's been a very, very light year. It feels
it is
for Wade Davis.
So
he's
weird
only pitched 14 2/3 this year.
Yeah,
over his 17 games.
It is bizarre that the Rockies traded Josh Rutledge to the Angels for Jairo Diaz. That's how long ago that was. That was 5 years ago they traded for him.
That is crazy. And Diaz, I think, was at the AA level then. But yeah, it's yeah, it's that guy is one of the best stories that has come through the Rockies organization in a while, and an easy guy to cheer for. And I'm excited because I remember when they traded for him, he had a ton of upside. And, you know, it was just all about, can this guy harness it? You know, he throws 102, 103. Can he get everything reined in command-wise? Can he be a guy who can be effective at the major league level with regularity? And then he was hurt, and he was just kind of gone. And actually, Diaz was not – it's not as though he's just been hanging around the organization for this entire time either. He was actually released and then re-signed, if I remember correctly. So it's – you know, this has not been an easy road at all. He, I guess, was not technically released. No, yeah, he was. June 12th of last year, he was released. The Rockies then re-signed him in August. And then he elected free agency over the offseason and then re-signed with the Rockies again in March. And his overall numbers with Albuquerque this year is 0.45 ERA with that one run allowed in 20 innings. Opponents are batting 171 against him, a whip of 0.90.
And that's in Albuquerque.
Ridiculous.
Like, that's that's a very hard place to do that.
In 2019, where there's already a dude in Kevin Crone at the AAA level with 21 homers, and it is May 23rd.
Because
Pacific Coast League is already impossible to pitch in, and this year with that baseball, it has become ridiculous.
Yeah, the ball's fine though. Come on,
it's totally,
it's not juiced at all.
It's totally cool. What should we talk about? Should we get some SPDP?
Let's get some SPDP. Yeah, we kind of gone through
it. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Who starts?
I don't have one queued up. It's your fault.
Oh. Let's go with our buddy Nick, one of the many Nicks on Rocky Twitter.
Yeah,
303
one?
To NYC. Quote.
Ugh, Nicks.
Why do the Rockies strike out so much? Third worst Ks per game in baseball. Do you think that they've considered not doing that? I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
No, I don't think they've thought about not doing that.
It's possible.
It's fun.
It is 2019 Major League Baseball. It's possible.
It's tremendous how much they strike out.
It has not been fun. It's, you know, I don't know. I don't think teams really worry about it that much anymore. I think it's just, you know, we're in this era of the three true outcomes. I don't think teams at a high level are really caring about it all that much.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's, you don't want to strike out 24 times in a game like the Rockies have done twice this year already.
Yeah.
But, you know, boy, they just showed a whole mess of Padres fans standing up, and there was a lot of camo shorts.
Oh, boy. Pirates fans?
Pirates fans, not Padres fans. Padres fans probably wear them, too.
That's
on Sundays.
Hanging out in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not what you want, as Joe Girardi would say, for both the camo shorts and the strikeouts.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't – it's just such a wave across baseball right now. Like, I don't think – you know, everything in sports is cyclical. And I think this is something that people need to keep in mind. When we're in this era where everybody just bitches nonstop about, like, oh, the game is ruined and look at these rule changes. And a lot of that comes from people who are making decisions about how to improve the game. All this stuff is cyclical. Like, just because players are striking out and hitting a lot of home runs right now does not mean that that's the way the game of baseball is going to be 10 years from now or 20 years from now or 50
or
years
5 years from now.
Exactly. Like, that's not how sports work. Sports are cyclical. We've gone through eras of things like this before, and everything regresses and comes back to the mean, or the pendulum swings to the other side. Pitchers will dominate for a while, and then it'll go back toward the hitter. Like, that's the way sports work.
Yeah.
And so I think right now, for everybody freaking out about this, like, yeah, I understand it to a certain extent, but, like, I don't expect that this is going to be the way the game of baseball looks from now until eternity.
No, because, you know, the pitchers will eventually make their adjustment, and then the hitters will be striking out even more, and then the hitters make the adjustment, and then we see a lot more home runs and blah, blah, blah. Like, or, like, the next inefficiency is going to be going back to, like, bunting and, you know,
right,
and hit and runs and stolen bases. Like, that's because that's how it works. Whatever, like, whatever everybody is doing, the team that does the opposite of that is going to, yep, be the one that people follow eventually.
Yep, exactly. And that's, you know, I mean, that's Moneyball. Moneyball,
you're exploiting inefficiencies. Right. Moneyball wasn't just on base percentage. Moneyball was exploiting market inefficiencies in how teams viewed players. That was
because,
it wasn't like they just won on base percentage. No,
right.
That was part of it because people weren't valuing that.
Right. And when you're a small market team, the reason it was called Moneyball and the reason that it worked for teams like the Oakland Athletics is that was an era of baseball in which teams that were spending huge and buying players were winning games. And so if you could be somebody who found something valuable and an undervalued guy, and you were able to afford that guy's contract, could put that guy out there and have him contribute, that was the only way you were going to compete with the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and whoever else it was at the time who was spending outrageous amounts of money on talent. But then all of those teams started to do that as well. And so now teams have had to look for other avenues to try to get to a stage where they can compete. That's the way sports work. It's the way sports work everywhere. Sports at large are a copycat affair. When one thing works for one team, every other team is going to try to do that thing.
How many
when
teams
everybody
did the
tries
opener
to do
this
something,
year, you know, like,
right.
Yeah.
When every team tries to do something, then somebody else is going to try to formulate some new concept to break out of that mold, and then everybody's going to go that route. Like, that's, yeah, just the way things work. So I'm not super worried about the strikeout thing. Like, yeah, I think it would probably benefit the Rockies a lot sometimes if they didn't strike out all that much. But, you know, it's kind of the way baseball is at the moment.
Yeah. By the way, do you know that Roundup has a sure shot wand to get weeds? And definitely does not give you cancer.
And pay out $2 billion to people who gave cancer.
I just love that MLB TV, they just run the exact same commercials every single break in the exact same order every single time. It's really great, and I love it.
What's also weird, too, is, like, I don't know. We've got a story coming up to MILB.com. The New Hampshire Fisher Cats are trying to...
Hampshire primaries.
The New Hampshire primaries are trying to go the route of a fully organic playing field. They're going to go to an organic pesticide and herbicide or whatever it is, and try to make their playing surface, you know, very green, very eco-friendly, all that. But then, yeah, you watch an MLB TV game and it's like, here's Roundup. Never mind the fact that this company was just ordered to pay $2 billion to a couple in California that the product gave cancer to, but... Here, buy some Roundup. Buy a lot of Roundup. All these Roundup innovations.
Well, and also, like, if you watch any commercial break from any MLB broadcast, it's all about penises that don't work, the military, and Dairy Queen. That's pretty much all the three commercial groups are. Dairy Queen, penises don't work, military.
These are the three segments of society.
you wonder what age group they're trying to market to.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Let's finish another question. That was the first question, by the way. This is from our buddy Dan Lucero at Dan Lucero Show. Which starting pitcher would you most like to see the Rockies pursue via trade?
Noah Syndergaard.
Okay.
That's it, and that's all, because I've had a crush on him for so long, and I wanna see his dreamy frame and his 100+ mile an hour arsenal and purple pinstripes, and that's all I care about. Do I think that's attainable? No, probably not.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Well, of a guy that could
possible,
be
possible, I guess.
That could be had in a trade.
Yeah.
We did this last night, the discussion about would the Nationals ever trade Max Scherzer, because they're not going anywhere. You know, they can get a lot for him. And I found out yesterday that Max Scherzer's deal, it was the word 7 for $210 or whatever it was. He only gets paid $15 million every year, which is obviously only get paid 15, you know. He's not getting like $30 million a year in like Greinke money or whatever it was. But he deferred the money to be paid $15 million every July 1st through 2028, like 6 years after his contract ends, he will still get.
Bonilla.
But on a macro level, he will get $15 million every July 1st through 2028.
God, that sounds amazing. Could you imagine like going to bed on June 30th?
You're right. And checking your bank account the next morning.
9 years from now. Oh, God, tomorrow morning's going to be amazing. Do you think they do that? You think they just direct deposit?
I really have no idea how that works.
Just wake up one day and there's eight more figures of currency in your account.
I can't imagine, but I can't even imagine looking at my Chase app and seeing that many numbers in it.
Amazing.
I mean, Scherzer, that's obviously not going to happen. That's a lot of money. They wouldn't do that.
I get excited when there's three digits before the decimal point in my bank account. I'm like rolling in it now.
You know what would suck? But it would be a very similar to the Daniel Murphy signing, was if the Rockies tried to trade for a guy like Trevor Bauer.
Yeah.
Now, Trevor Bauer is very talented, and he loves one-year deals. He doesn't want to get like the five-year, $100 million contract, whatever. He'll take one-year deals the rest of his career. He said this publicly. And he would be a guy that he works deep into games. He has a great arsenal of pitches. He's somewhat inconsistent, but last year, he was one of the best starters in the American League before he went down. Now, also, Trevor Bauer is a huge online piece of shit. Yeah. That's also a thing that
Trevor Bauer, for some reason, was given a pulpit to discuss the problem of bullying online.
He harasses women online, which is a thing that he definitely does. He would be a fun one if the Rockies were to entertain that idea, because he would fit the Rockies' budget. He would fit the Rockies' needs for a good starting pitcher. But, you know, a lot of teams aren't going to take on just how annoying Trevor Bauer is. Because Trevor Bauer, he was a third overall pick, and the D-backs traded him within a year because they couldn't stand his personality.
They hate him. And I remember thinking when that trade went down, like, look at the D-backs. What a bunch of idiots. And that was like around the time when they were just dealing away. They traded away Dansby Swanson. Right. They made all these bizarre moves. But that one, looking back at it now, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
Well, and the Indians have kept with it for long enough because they kind of let him go and let him kind of do his thing, do his weird warm-ups and do whatever. Like, you know, and he's been pretty good for the Indians. But the relationship between those two entities has been one of, you know, you go your way, I'll go mine. Don't really meddle in my affairs. And they had a very contentious arbitration hearing this year with the Indians and Trevor Bauer, where the Indians went in and, you know, what all arbitration hearings are, what it comes down to is basically you're just trash talking the players so you can pay them less money. And they had a lot of ammunition, and Trevor Bauer was seemingly not ready for that. If you read all the accounts of it, the Indians and Trevor Bauer are not friendly with each other, but that's kind of how Trevor Bauer ends up working wherever he ends up going. He does not make a lot of friends. So if they have an opportunity to trade for him, that could be a very, very interesting and yet very annoying player to deal with.
Yeah, it would
honestly be
honestly be very difficult to cheer for that team.
With Daniel Murphy and Trevor Bauer.
And Daniel Murphy.
It's not what you want necessarily, but you know, in terms of need, that's something the Rockies desperately need at this point.
Yeah, something.
A starter who can miss bats.
Really something. Noah Syndergaard, make it happen. I just love him so much.
That's fine. You can love him.
I love him. He's so great.
Weird guy.
By the way, I was told in my reply to the Twitter comment about how the Rockies are not willing to spend money on their bullpen, I was told that it was an opinion that they spent $106 million on the bullpen going into 2018. You can have your opinions, is what it said. So anyway, let's move along for another Ask PDP. Let's go with Will, our good buddy at Will_E_777. Quote, what renovations would you most like to see at Coors? Not just LOL, more party decks. Also, should the Rockies use a bullpen card?
Well, the bullpen card would need, what, less gas or more gas because of altitude?
I think less.
Less gas. It's like water boils faster or longer? I always mess that up.
Faster. No, slower.
Slower, no. Yeah, that's right.
No,
yes?
Faster.
No?
Faster.
Faster? Faster. Faster.
It is faster, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I don't know how to boil water. what they make? I was just at Coors Field a couple weeks ago now, for the first time in a couple years, and the old bird looked great.
The old bird,
third oldest ballpark in the National League.
Yeah, incredible.
I don't know, man. Double party decks is still,
honestly, like, no joking aside, I remember hearing a rumor at one time that the Rockies were going to make a down the left field line on the third level. There are a couple of seating sections that are generally closed off, like the last two upper level sections.
Yeah.
Down the left field line. And that they were going to do something that was kind of resembling the party deck on that side. But I think that would be cool. I mean, those spaces are so valuable now in stadiums. Like, it's not just enough anymore to have, like, oh, well, we got a stadium that has really good suite level. Like, that was always, like, the thing for when a stadium was going to be built, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore, and I like that. Like, you have to cater to actual human beings nowadays.
Yeah, like, I sat in club level for the first time in my entire life last week, and I was like, oh, this is cool.
It's cool.
This is club fun. Yeah.
And club level is actually, like, sort of accessible to real people. Like, if you're a Wells Fargo customer, I think they have a deal at club level seats for Rockies games. I think with a certain amount of money that you spend at King Supers, I think they have deals for club level seats. But yeah, like, I remember when I was a kid and I had friends who had, like, their parents had season tickets at club level, and you felt, like, swanky, but not, like, overly swanky, not like, oh, sitting in the Land Cruiser Club or whatever they call the first couple of rows behind home plate. But yeah, it's like, it's cool. I think the fact that you can bring neat experiences to just normal people through things like the rooftop, though, that's the best function of modern day additions to a ballpark. The thing that they have needed most, that we have talked about many times on the show, and that is actually happening, though it is not happening at the ballpark itself, is a museum, Colorado Baseball History Museum. And as part of that new development across 20th Street, just south of Coors Field, that's going to be part of that, McGregor Square or whatever they're calling it. That they've needed that for a long time. And there actually is an entire wing of Coors Field that was built into the ballpark in the original blueprints and the original construction plans to house a stadium. And the Rockies have just never used it for that. The archives are back there. But there's an entire wing down at the end of the club level, down the right field line, just underneath where the Mountain Ranch Club is, that is supposed to be a baseball history stadium. And is or a baseball history museum. It has never been used that way in that little concaved corner of the stadium. It's like set in below. It's really cool. Like, you walk in and there's all these cool ramps. You can kind of see where everything would have been set up. They've just never done it. So it's, I don't know. I think it's awesome that they're finally doing things to recognize their history. My hope is that they will recognize all of Colorado's baseball history and not just 1993 and on.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
The Rockies have never
Denver
really
Bears and
that.
Denver Zephyrs and Silver Bullets.
Yeah. In fact, the Rockies, the Denver Post hosted an integrated baseball tournament back in the 1930s, like 12 years before Jackie Robinson broke the color line in Major League Baseball. The Denver Post was hosting a tournament, which was basically the premier baseball tournament in the western half of the the United States, and they had Negro League teams playing in that. Denver had a barnstorming Negro League team called the White Elephants as far back as like the teens or the 20s or something like that. Like, Denver has a lot of really cool baseball history, and the Rockies have basically never acknowledged it. I shouldn't say I've never acknowledged it. They've just never been good about publicly acknowledging it. They've got a tremendous staff. Their archivist, Paul, whose last name is escaping me at the moment, they've done a really good job with gathering all of that stuff, but keeping it behind closed doors, like, what's the point in that? So my hope is that when that stadium opens, it will give the due respect to everything that came for the century plus before 1993. It just hasn't really been that way to this point in Rockies history. That's what I would say. That's the thing that I want most at Coors Field or in the surrounding area. And it looks as though it's happening.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that too. By the way, Ian Desmond, another double there coming off the old bench.
Wow.
What was funny about Ian Desmond?
He's
the month
of
May
player.
Month of May, Ian Desmond slashing .302, .434, .581 for a 10.15 OPS coming into play today. Nearly 1-to-1 K to walk ratio, 2 home runs, 7 driven in 53 plate appearances. And more importantly, he has taken his ground ball percentage down from 62% in his first two seasons combined, 2017 and 2018, down to 42%, a 20% drop in ground balls.
It's good.
That's a start.
It's very good.
Yeah. And according to Manny Randava, who's been championing this on Twitter forever, it seems like, Ian Desmond retooled his swing. He's been trying new things, which what we've been trying to say for the last 2.5 years, that he should try something different. Finally seems to. And he's having quite a good run here in the month of May. Just came in on in relief of Charlie Blackman. Blackman was 7-0, took him out of the game because why not? And just laced a double to right center off right-hander Jordan Lyles. And hey, man, we've always said we want Ian Desmond to start playing well. We want him to stop hitting the ball on the GD ground. That'd be great. Looks like he started to do that.
Tremendous.
Tremendous.
It's tremendous.
Absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, we've said a bajillion times, like, Ian Desmond's a great dude. We want Ian Desmond to be successful.
But he,
so
for
if
two
it happens,
years,
that would be great for everybody.
For 2 years and a month, he seemed to be the most stubborn player in baseball, tried seemingly nothing to change his approach. Yeah. And as May started, he changed his approach. What a shock.
I'm still just, like, grossed out by the idea of Daniel Murphy and Trevor Bauer on the same field.
I'm just saying, you know, it's I'm not saying I want it. I am saying it is it's something that fits the Rockies' budget and it fits their needs, you know.
Gross. Chris Finlay, one of our European bureau chiefs, who resides on the Isle of Man, quote, if this team can somehow crack .500 by the end of the month, do they have a chance at making the wild card?
I mean, yeah, for sure. But it's also
very early the division if they get back to .500 by the end of the month.
Sure. It is very, very early in the year still. It is. We'll only be 2 months in, still 4 months ago, you know, yeah, there'd be plenty of time for things to start working, keep happening if that were the case. So, yeah, just, you know, right now, just collect wins. Don't look at the standings. Don't look at the record right now. Just keep collecting wins and eventually they'll start to happen for you. That's all you have to worry about at this point, in my opinion. Like, I don't even look at standings until after the All-Star break. I really, really don't.
This is a team that started 2-3-12 and has played 5 games over .500 since then. If you extrapolate that out, which has gone on for much longer than the 3-12 start to the year, again, you're a team that is 15, 20, 20 plus games over .500 by the end of the season. The Rockies finished 90-72. I think everybody would be thrilled with that. They finished 92-70. I think you'd be even happier.
It may not even be enough to make the wild card at 90 wins, depending how competitive the National League is this year. There's a lot of teams that are vying for those two wild card spots and for the division, for that matter.
It's possible. But yeah, I mean, I think they're fine. They're right in the hunt. The Giants are starting to fall off. I don't see the Padres and D-backs hanging around forever. Although,
gotta imagine the Giants are going to start selling very, very soon. They have a lot of really good bullpen pieces that are going to get a lot near the deadline. They got the whole Madison Bumgarner question.
That's going to be really interesting.
Right. So, you know, they've got a lot of pieces to sell off. Yeah. And they should start doing it soon.
Yeah.
I'm sure Farhan Zaidi is going for it. So we'll see.
That's going to be interesting. to see what a rebuilding Giants organization looks like. It's going to be
interesting. Yeah.
Like two more? We'll get out of here?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see. Here's one that I feel like you're well positioned to answer because you can back up some things with some of those numbers there. From our good buddy Ryan Ladika, is Tony Walters hashtag good now?
I mean, Tony Walters is entering today. He's not playing today, I guess. So he is slashing 294, 345, 431 for a 777 OPS, which was literally 200 points higher exactly than he put up last year.
Yikes.
He already has as many extra base hits as he had all of last year in 100 fewer plate appearances. He had his first home run of the season last night, a three-run shot that put some separation between the Rockies and the Pirates. He's playing fantastic defensively this year, throwing out a lot of runners because that's what he is good at. It's a 44% caught stealing percentage this year, which is one of the best marks in all of baseball. He has allowed 10 stolen bases with 8 caught stealings. That is very good. And he's framing the ball well. So anything he gives you offensively can be seen as a plus. And right now the offense is very much a plus right now. And you can say it's not going to last. You can say he's getting lucky, and fine, he is. But is Tony Walters hitting 294 better than him hitting 170? Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. His OPS plus is 94. That is just down below league average. That's great.
Yeah.
Last year it was 48. This year it's 94. That's awesome. He is becoming, if he's a league average hitting catcher with the defense he provides, that means he is an elite catcher.
I'm good with that.
And especially when Chris Iannetta has been very, very bad so far this year for the most part. And our good buddy Brian Kilpatrick had a note today that if the Rockies do lose this game that is not being played today, we mentioned, unless they come back and from 8-0 down, they are going to drop to 3-10 this season in games started by Chris Iannetta, and they've been outscored by 40 runs in those games.
Yeah, now it's only 38, so let's not go wacky. Yes.
Yeah.
But prior to this little two-run outburst here, they had been outscored 99-59 in Chris Iannetta's 13 starts, allowing 7.6 runs per game.
Chris Iannetta's fault necessarily, obviously. But
he's not, you know, the Rockies are a black hole when it comes to catching. They have been throughout franchise history. They've never developed a good catcher. Chris Iannetta is probably the best one they've ever developed. And
that's
they
not saying a lot,
shipped him out of town for all of his best years because Dan O'Dowd was super smart that way. This is a franchise that has never really had a good catcher, has never been able to develop a catcher, has never really signed or traded for a good catcher. And Tony Walters right now is like a decent option for this team. He's like a decent, good catching presence. He's handling himself defensively. He's actually getting things done with the bat. Like, this is kind of fun for them at the moment.
Yeah, and he's...
And it's fun for us because he's so lovable.
He's putting good at bats together. Yeah, he's a great guy to root for.
Yeah.
You know, he put in his time in the minor leagues as an infielder, revamped his entire life to become a catcher, and all of a sudden became an elite defensive catcher as well. If he hits the ball, that's awesome. By the way, a good note for today. Today's lineup, the first ever in Rockies history in which all starters were originally signed by the Rockies as either draftees or non-drafted free agents and made their debuts as Rockies. And if it weren't for Iannetta, all those guys would spend their entire careers with Colorado since Iannetta was shipped out and then came back. So that's a pretty cool note because draft and development is a scam, as we all know.
As we know, the Rockies need to sign only players from Venezuela. copyright,
yes.
The Denver Post 2015.
Yes.
I miss that thing. I miss the sports show so much. For those who were not around for the early days of Rockies Twitter, those were fun days.
That was a lot of what it was about. Yeah.
It's a weird form of like Stockholm syndrome when you kind of miss the days when the team was bad because it was just so much fun on Twitter. Like, we had no expectations. There was no anxiety over whether or not they were going to be good or not.
No.
So we could just like all act like complete idiots. Like, you think Rocky's Twitter is weird now. Like 2014, 2015. Hey, look at B-Rod coming through.
I mean,
game that is not being played.
The game is not being played at all. But if it were,
what if they
Rockies
came back
making a little comeback here. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh man. You wanna toss out
Yeah.
one more?
Yeah. Let's if you got one.
Let's see. Let's find one more good one. We really do get some pretty good Ask PDP queries into the old show. From Zach Wingrovey, is one of our good pals. Does Daniel Murphy have any trade value? Could he get flipped for a decent-ish bullpen arm? I guess what I'm asking is, can they get rid of Murphy so McMahon and Rogers can play at the same time, because Bud Black refuses to do so otherwise?
They will not do that. That's a non-starter. Unfortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's not going to happen. He's going to be there for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Basically. Unless next year goes south and they go younger, but that's now he's going to be here and he's going to get the starts. Yeah. Yeah.
It's habit true.
Yeah. So it's, you know, if Brendan Rodgers keeps hitting the way that he has been in the first week or so, like he's got another hit today, got a 2-run single there, 3 hits last night. If he gets comfortable quickly, that's going to probably push Ryan McMahon to the bench. Yeah. Unfortunately, No, McMahon has been hitting a little bit better over the last couple of weeks. He'll probably see his playing time cut if Rodgers becomes the starting second baseman, because that really lengthens that lineup a lot if he is hitting well at second base. So
yeah.
Murphy is going to get the bulk of the starts as long as he is on the active roster, and that's pretty much what it's going to come down to.
Womp womp. There is one more that I wanted to get to. I think it's a really good question, and it is from Jack. Jack, I don't know how exactly to say your last name. Could be Quade, could be Quade, Quade. I don't know. But Jack asks, who is your favorite prospect that doesn't get enough attention? Something in the 11 to 30 ranking. MLB.com's number 21 Rockies prospect, right-hander Rico Garcia. We had a really good story from my good pal Andrew Batterfrano at MILB.com about Rico last week, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago. Rico Garcia is one of those guys who really has, like, no business being as good as he is. He is listed at 5'11", 190. He was a 30th-round draft pick out of Hawaii Pacific University, which has only produced one major leaguer in its history, former Rockies legend Benny Agbayani. Rico Garcia, who I named Rockies organization all-star at the end of last year, terrific season for him so far this year for the Double A Hartford Yard Goats. 5-1 with a 1.98 ERA through 9 starts. He has struck out 63 batters in 50 innings against 18 walks. Opponents rating 187 against him. Rico Garcia is like fantastic as a pitching prospect, and you probably haven't heard of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you always got to find those guys. I mean, of course, like guys like Ryan Rollison have been pitching well. They've been doing it all season
he's
long.
Been amazing.
He's up in Lancaster right now, I believe.
Yeah,
right.
And doing great. Lancaster is.
I got to go see a Jethawks game at some point.
You can't put up an ERA of 1.5 in Lancaster, and yet Ryan Rollison has an ERA of 1.5. He's a 1.52, 2-0 record through 5 starts. He has struck out 31 and 29 2/3. He's only walked 6. Opponents are batting .217 against him. That's after 3 starts with Asheville to start the year, in which he put up a 0.61 ERA, struck out 14 and walked 2 and 14 2/3. Ryan Rollison is going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, guys like Rico Garcia, you've got to be able to hit on dudes who nobody else saw anything in. And I remember Zach Wilson, the Rockies player development director, I asked him about Rico Garcia coming into the season, and he just lit up when I asked him about it. And you can tell scouting departments, player development people, teammates, coaches, they love guys like that who everybody else counted out. And when they're on your side and they're proving that they can get the job done, it's so damn cool. And Rico Garcia obviously has a ton of fans inside the organization, and he's somebody that you should know the name of and you should watch out for.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for the Big West. You know, I covered Long Beach State for a few years. Any guys that I ended up because I ended up seeing or knowing through this through that conference, great conference for baseball. Vince Fernandez, an outfielder. He was number 24 in MLB Pipeline. He is in Hartford this year out of UC Riverside, the Highlanders. And for the Yard Goats this year, hitting .296, 13 home runs, 30 runs batted in, an OPS over 1,000 in 46 games. He is 23, a 10th round pick out of UC Riverside back in 2016. He has really come on this year after hitting .265 with a .902 OPS and 24 homers in Lancaster last year. He has proved that was no wind-aided California League fluke coming out to Hartford and putting up the numbers he has this year. So keep an eye on Vince Fernandez. I'm a huge fan.
A couple other guys that I want to just touch on real quick. Casey Golden is a prospect who last year hit 34 homers. He was in the chase for the minor league home run crowd right up until the end of the season with Class A Asheville. This year he's up at Class A Advanced Lancaster. An 829 OPS. The bat hasn't really come around quite as much, but he's one to keep an eye on. Doesn't play great defense in the outfield, but he's a guy who could maybe make a move and kind of surprise some people as being a future major leaguer out of UNC Wilmington in North Carolina. One guy to keep your eye on who seems to maybe be resurrecting himself is Riley Pint. And it comes
I've been hurt before.
It comes with a ton of caveats. Riley Pint this year has made three starts, and as a starter, he is 0-1. With an ERA of 18, giving up 6 runs on 2 hits in 3 innings, walking 9 and striking out 5. But he has moved to the bullpen, and the Rockies have been trying to rebuild Riley Pint in these short little bursts. He has now thrown 7 straight scoreless appearances. He has only given up 2 hits since really the beginning of May. He had one relief appearance that was really ugly on May 2nd. But in his 7 outings since then, I'm going to tap dance while I find the full numbers. He has been really, really good. And the thing that I like about it is if you can rebuild a guy's confidence by getting him out there with these little bite-sized pieces of success, then maybe it does finally turn into a circumstance where you can sort of set him loose again. I'm not sure if the Rockies are going to look at Riley Pint as somebody who they feel like can really get back into a starting role anytime soon. But over his last 7 outings, an ERA of 0, 7 innings pitched, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks. He's hit 1 batter. He's only given up 2 hits. Opponents are batting 0.95 against him, and he's got a whip of 0.57. Yes, it's only 7 innings of work. But the Rockies had to figure
better
out...
better than nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. They had to figure out something to save Riley Pint. And this is the most encouraging thing to me. Listen to his pitch totals and his strike totals over those 7 appearances. The first one of those, one inning of work against Delmarva on May 50, threw 22 pitches, only 9 of them were strikes. Next time out, days later, 11 pitches, 8 strikes. 3 days after that, 8 pitches, 6 strikes.
Good.
2 days after that, 12 pitches, 8 strikes. Fine. 6 pitches to get all 3 outs in an inning against Lexington on the 17th. 5 of those were strikes. 11 pitches, 6 strikes against Lexington again on the 19th. Last time out 2 days ago, we're recording this on the 23rd, against Charleston on the 21st. 13 pitches, 11 strikes. He struck out 2. He only faced 3 batters. Like, this is what the Rockies need to see from him. Maybe, just maybe, Riley Pint is figuring it out. It's a long way to go.
A long way to go, but it's better than what we've seen
over the
last couple of years. Yes,
exactly.
Also, this game that's not happening is now 8-6.
I know. Yeah. It's crazy. If
the game were actually happening,
was happening. Now, from what I've heard, if they take the lead, then I think the game is actually happening in reality.
Well, yeah, well,
if they have it at the end.
Oh, the sad Jordan Lyles, like, head in his hands shot.
That's glorious.
Oh, that's like patented.
If Ian Desmond is a 3-run homer right here.
I mean, like, Ian Desmond started this whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, man. And even Chris Iannetta reached. Like, what?
He walked, yeah.
Oh, boy.
By the way, this was a runner on second and 2 outs when this all started.
This was an 8-0 game at one point. It is now a 2-run game in the 6th inning. Like, what on earth?
This inning started, Chad Bettis struck out, Desmond doubled the right center, and Trevor Story grounded out. So it was 2 outs, runner on second base. And then Dahl single, score. Nolan single. Tapia single, score. McMahon walked. Rogers single, 2-run scored. Iannetta walked. Murphy single, 2-run scored.
Yeah, I like it.
If this game was happening.
Yeah, if it was. We'll just have to reevaluate by the end of the ninth whether or not this game actually took place. So I guess that'll do it. I guess we'll wrap it up.
I mean, it's a long one today.
Yeah, it's a good one.
We're just checking, having fun, you know.
Yeah, you know, we're riffing. There's not a whole lot of things to really discuss about this random ham sandwich of a team at the moment. So we tried to make it as entertaining as we could.
If they do win this game, that's not happening. It'll be a 4-4 road trip.
Yeah, and then they'll
face one of the worst teams in baseball.
And they come home, what, 2 games under 500? 3 games under 500? They would be 2 games under if they won this game today.
Yeah, how about that?
23-25, be okay with that. But their run differential.
Back to 0 right now.
Oh, man. All right, we'll wrap it up. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week. Love you. Bye.
Bye.